What's up? It's Nikki K, and you are listening to another episode of the Young Upstart series, The Clippers Beat, all part of CLNS Media Network. It is Sunday afternoon, early evening. The Clippers just dropping in big time in Denver. Final score 105-88. Not a great performance by the Clips, but the good news is they've got a chance for redemption. That is the first game of a back-to-back heading into Monday's game against the Dallas Mavericks. And I am so stoked, you guys. This is the first guest proud to welcome here on the Clippers Beat. And it is none other than Tim Cato, the beat writer for The Athletic covering the Dallas Mavericks. He is in Los Angeles and he brought some sunshine with him. Tim, how's it going? Welcome to LA.
Hey, happy to be here. This is exciting. This is a lot of pressure. Debut guests. I have to set the tone for all other guests that will come on here. And I'm sure they're going to be great ones. So, I'll do the best I can here.
You're raising the bar already just by your sheer presence. So happy to have you. Thank you again. And from my understanding, since you've joined the Mavs beat, this is kind of your first season getting out in LA. What's your big impression so far?
Oh, I love LA. I love it. I love it. I love just how every like you're driving down the highway and the neighborhoods are just so colorful, and like all the houses are like these different shades of pastels. I love that. Obviously, you know, everybody talks about the weather, but into that. So I've thoroughly enjoyed every Los Angeles trip, and I wish this wasn't the last time they're going to be out here, because I'm going to find any excuse I can to get here as often as I can.
Hey, you know, the good thing is that LA is quickly becoming a big place for athletes to have, you know, off-season stuff and, you know, side business projects. So I'm sure your business will bring you here sooner than later. And, you know, I was out in the Southwest area for a bit. I know how Texas does their Tex-Mex. You're going to – and you said you get to try some SoCal Mexican cuisine tonight, right?
That's the idea, so I'm excited.
All right. I can't wait for the review. But let's get to it. The Clippers are now 33-28 after dropping one in Denver. It's crowded at the bottom of the Western Conference standings, and every game matters. I mean, the front office, Steve Ballmer, especially on his little media tour recently, has made it very clear that the Clippers are intent on making the playoffs, which, you know, the moves at the trade deadline kind of suggested otherwise. So, Tim, I kind of feel like the Clippers have faced the Mavericks like so much in the past 2 months. I mean, what, they had two meetings in December, one on January 22nd, and here we are again, or late February, facing off for the fourth and final time.
Yeah, no, it's they kind of all crammed them in, you know, in relatively as much as four games can be crammed in, you know, to a little 3 month span there. They're pretty close together. It does feel like I've seen the Clippers a lot over the past few weeks, and you know, they've been up and down games. I honestly can't even, you know, they all blur together to an extent, but the weird thing is that you know, the rosters are going to look so much different, you know, tomorrow on Monday, you know, when they play, obviously, you know, because both teams are, I want to say probably the two most active teams at the trade deadline. I think the Mavericks, you know, ended up trading five new players, sent out four, and then the Clippers, obviously, you know, three, four players. So, yeah, no, it's pretty dramatically different rosters, you know, for a team that, you know, played just a month ago.
That's the very interesting parallel between these two squads. Obviously, the Mavs aren't necessarily in as much of the playoff hunt at this point, but the compelling, I think, storylines between these two teams is that, like, they both now have to kind of reestablish a new identity with the new pieces that they've, you know, acquired since early February. So what have you seen evolve over there in Mavericks land as they're trying to integrate new personnel in?
Yeah. The Mavericks, it's obviously a weird time to be the Mavericks. Everybody's kind of already looking ahead to September because everybody wants to see Luka and Kristaps play together. And there's, you know, Kristaps has been like definitively ruled out. There's no chance he plays this year. So everybody's kind of looking ahead. And it's a team made up of you know, a few players who won't be part of the future. But I think there's still a lot of players in Dallas that are important for their future. Obviously, number one, Luka Doncic, that mm-hmm. goes without saying. You know, he's on track, I think, to win every rookie of the month. You know, betting markets have already called it in his favor.
They all the months.
For Luka, mm-hmm. Luka of the year bets because he's already the lock, which is just hilarious. So when you know, it's worth watching him every night. He's missed a couple games. He missed the back-to-back that the Mavericks just went on. But I would be surprised if he missed Monday's game against the Clippers. You know, I don't think it was a major injury. And now a couple, you know, after sitting out a couple games, you know, I would imagine he will be back out there. You know, and then around the team, there's players that are going to play roles for them as the team goes forward. So, you know, it's a scrappy team. You know, they have a lot of, you know, they have talent around the edges. They have players who can go off. You know, they're not an easy out. I don't think any team coached by Rick Carlisle is ever an easy out. That said, you know, I think the Clippers, you know, rightly should be favored, you know, as a team that, you know, is definitely, you know, they're what, six games over 500, the Mavericks are seven under, something like that. So, you know, this is definitely a game that if, you know, they want to live up to the Steve Ballmer playoff expectations, they should probably win.
That's what's so funny about this matchup is that they, both teams, I think the Mavericks and the Clippers are part of that Western Conference fabric that it's like, you can't rule them out on any given night. Like the Clippers just have a way of, that's why, like, even with them down 20 and 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter or something like that in this game against the Nuggets, it's like this team kind of finds ways to get back in it when they have no right to be in it. So I think it's, you know, maybe it's not the sexiest of matchups, but it's going to be fun. And I'm just so curious, what's the feeling you get around kind of the Mavericks franchise right now, from front office to kind of the environment in Dallas, like with the excitement of that Kristaps Luka pairing in the near future?
Oh, I think you know, it's so obvious. Everybody's pumped. You know, I think mm-hmm. I think Dallas really, really believes that. You know, they can hardly believe that they were able to go up and do this. And, you know, I think that it was a deal that made sense for both sides. But I think Dallas looks at the trade and they're just stunned that they were able to get a player like that for the price that they did. You know, it did cost them in terms of picks and some stuff. They were ready to move on from Dennis Smith. That relationship just had really faltered, obviously, with the drama around him, with him leaving the team or skipping a couple games and then returning, and you know, just the fact that he's going to take longer. You know, I still have high hopes for him as a player, but he didn't fit their timeline. And Luka just kind of changed expectations everywhere. So there's already a ton of excitement in Dallas, you know, from the moment they drafted Luka, and then when he came in and outperformed even, you know, the wildest expectations that you know, the team had for him. You know, he has been that good. But now the fact that they're able to add Kristaps, you know, who they see as like a legitimate 1-2 pairing, you know, two players who could actually be the best two players on a championship team. You know, neither of them are quite there yet, but they're 19 and 23, or, you know, they're going to be 24 and 20 headed into next season. So, you know, just the level of excitement is so high, and it's hard to not, you know, just hit fast forward, obviously. You know, I think everybody would be really tempted to if they had the universe remote to life. And just kind of jump ahead through the commercials, if you will.
Gosh, I know. It's going to be so exciting. I love what they did. And, you know, that's why we love the NBA so much. And I do want to know, though, if you think Luka could be playing, does that mean we won't be treated to a Dirk start? Because he started in Utah, right?
He did. Unless I'm just missing one. That was his first one all year.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. I guess it depends. The reason he started was Maxi Kleber was out as well. And so that's the player they've been starting at the four. So I think it's probably more about Kleber's injury status than Luka's. I'd love to see him starting in. I think that, honestly, if they could – you know, squeeze them into the center role or something. You know, I do think that the team definitely must, they've got to start him, you know, in the last two games of the season. But the more times we can start him, the more times we can get Dirk minutes. And I think he had the game against Utah was a season high. And, you know, even though it took him, you know, like 14 shots to get the 15 points that he scored, you know, it's you know, you can never have too much Dirk in your life. And so
never.
Yeah, with the playoffs looking more and more out of reach for the Dallas, you know, I see no reason other than play Dirk as much as they possibly can, you know, given his obvious age concerns and you know, matchup limitations and all that. But as many minutes as they can get him out there, you know, I'm all for that.
Yes, give Dirk all the minutes, please. What do you see kind of being the biggest mismatch between these two teams?
That's a good question. I think that, you know, if it is interesting to see what who they're going to try to put on, the Clippers, guards. They're mm-hmm. two big guards. Obviously Shea is, you know, at 6'6", you know, Shea's a really, really exciting, guy, you know, one of my favorite players.
In the draft.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But now Landry Shamet's also a taller point guard, you know, whatever you want to call him. You know, I know he plays off ball a good bit, but mm-hmm. but yeah, between those two, you know, I think that's an exciting little backcourt. And you know, Dallas has some smaller guards. Obviously, Luka is a tall point guard, but I don't know how much you want him on someone as quick as maybe Shea. So
yeah,
you know, whether they go Jalen Brunson can hold up. Brunson's had a couple really good games in a row. Obviously, the national champion and player of the year in college, you know, it's taken a while. He hasn't been a steady rotation member, but, you know, with the team's injuries and trades, you know, he's been a steadily playing of late and actually playing really well, had a career high 22 points. But defensive challenges, you know, is something that he's also working his way through. So we'll see if he ends up on Shea, how he holds up through that. I wonder if they'd even put Dorian Finney-Smith, who's taller, a wing, but you know, they often use him on their toughest defensive matchups. You know, he's obviously a bulldog defender, they like to say about him. And, you know, whether he can shift all the way down to guarding a point guard, it's going to kind of give you mismatches somewhere else. But, you know, I think the team could afford that because they have Luka, and Luka is taller. And that also kind of, you know, if he's playing point guard, that gives you a extra 6'8 player in a position that usually – you know, you don't have a 6'8 player, you know, playing point guard. So there's some weird mismatches they can do. And I think that it mostly for me comes down to the point guard position with the Clippers.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Doc's been loving trotting out those three guard lineups, and like, I don't really blame him. The team kind of hasn't been with a, true, small forward for a minute, you know? And so, I also think that the Clippers, in a weird twist of, you know, when you guys have DeAndre Jordan on your roster, the Clippers aren't one of the stronger rebounding teams. It'll be interesting to see if Zubats is able to, you know, kind of hold his own maybe against the Mavericks front court a little bit. But, last time they played when Dallas creamed Dallas held the Clippers to under 100 points, right? And, like, DJ had 13 and 16, so he had a good night for himself. And, yeah, I think the battle below is kind of a weakness for the Clippers as well.
Yeah, yeah. No, if the Mavs could have got Jordan playing against the Clippers every game, maybe they wouldn't have to trade him. he always gave a bit of effort against Clippers that, you know, sometimes was missing in other matchups. So,
yeah, yeah. So, no, absolutely. It's hard to keep track of all that movement and follow that along as the twists and turns take us. What do you think of the Western Conference as a whole right now? Like, this battle between the Kings, I mean, the Lakers, that game last night with the Pelicans without Anthony Davis, that should have been a must win for Los Angeles. And it's a little bit disconcerting over there in the purple land of purple and gold. What do you think of this playoff race at the bottom of the standings?
Yeah, it's wild. It's a wild Western Conference. I think it goes legitimately, you know, about 13 teams deep. The 13th seed right now is the Mavericks, and they're obviously the team that's most on the outside looking in terms of pushing for that eighth playoff spot at that eighth seed. But no, it's amazing how deep it is. It's amazing how many good teams there are. You know, now that I would say that, you know, before the Grizzlies traded Marc Gasol, it was 14 teams, and now, mm-hmm. you know, without Marc, it's a little tough to see them as quite at the same level. But you know, from let's see, I have the standings open. You know, from the Rockets to the Mavericks, which is the fifth seed to the 13th seed, only about seven games separate all of them, and so that it's not a lot. You know, it's not as wide of a gap as you see some years. You know, I think all these teams are really good. Like you said, the Pelicans, you know, surprise win. You know, the Lakers obviously have LeBron, and when you have LeBron, you're always dangerous. The Timberwolves have put together a feisty squad ever since stealing Jimmy Butler, and I like some of the things that they've been doing. I would still say, as I kind of look at the standings, that the Clippers are probably the favorites. I think it's close between, you know, the Kings and the Lakers. I don't think the Spurs are locked into a playoff spot either. You know, same record as the Clippers. And I could see them falling a bit. It's hard to say that because every time you say that, every time you think it, it's finally gonna not, you know, struggle slightly. You know, they just still make it happen anyway. But I feel pretty good about the top six seeded teams in the West making it, which is Warriors, Denver, Oklahoma City, Portland, Houston, and Utah. But beyond that, you know, that mix of Spurs, Clippers, Kings, Lakers, it's tough to see exactly who's going to come out of that.
Yes.
You know, I could make a case for all four teams making the playoffs, I think, pretty comfortably.
Right? It's like the conundrum right now. It's like, okay, do you bet against LeBron? No, that's silly. But then also, I mean, it does not look good over there. If you had to pick out of these four teams, which two are in the playoffs? Out of Spurs, Clippers, Kings, and Lakers, what two are making the seventh and eighth seeds?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm rooting for the Kings for sure, man.
Yes,
they're fun. I love Fox. I love Buddy Hield and what they've brought together over there. I would say if I had to guess though, oh man.
Probably, I know, right?
Because they always, you know, they have the head start and they always figure it out. I'll go in and say the Lakers actually squeeze in. And that's, I don't know. Like I said, it's so easy to make a case for all four teams. You know,
yeah.
I'd love to, you know, schedule's going to play a big factor here. And I think if any team has a major injury, you know, I feel good about their chances slipping pretty far.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Lakers have LeBron back finally, and I think that, you know, these are getting to the point where he's going to have to go play off LeBron, essentially. They're must-win games for them to make the playoffs. And so, you know, if you get a higher level of production out of LeBron, you know, even if the supporting cast still has, you know, just kind of the general malaise around them that all the trade deadline stuff brought about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you have a playoff type LeBron who's playing 40 minutes a night. I can't not see them rattle off 5-6 wins in a row. And, you know, that would go a long ways towards catching up, but they're also four games behind. So
yeah.
I think the Clippers are they're in a good spot. You know, I think that, you know, with the Kings, the Lakers behind them, you know, having that two game head start like they do right now is important, and that's all you can do. You can just try to win games and hope that, you know, you go about 500, but also that the Kings and Lakers don't just, you know, neither of them go on a tear, because that's, you know, I think if the Lakers at least have a higher gear that they can hit with LeBron. The higher ceiling, and if that happens, you know, I don't think, you know, Los Angeles can keep winning games steadily, but they don't have a just ridiculously high ceiling now that, you know, they have dealt away Tobias Harris and do have a young roster. So I think it's both going to take them playing steadily from now until, you know, the beginning of April, and also just, you know, getting fortunate that you know, one of the teams below them just doesn't out-talent them, essentially.
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head, and I mean, the Clippers are facing that weird weird dilemma of, you know, do you make the push to be in the playoffs or do you not, and then keep your lottery pick and instead of sending it to Boston, etc. I know you wrote a great article on seven questions kind of facing the Mavericks after the trade deadline. And what do you see them in terms of their big game hunting this off season? And I guess maybe over the next 18 months, who do you think that franchise has its eye on as all-star or, you know, talent that they want to bring in?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's the big question. I think that, you know, you look around the league and all the best teams have, you know, three players, you know, they all have a third superstar, you know, that they have in addition to two. Clearly Dallas looks at Kristaps and Luka and, you know, has the massively high expectations and for them that they do and mass, you know, very, very high, you know, opinions of them. But, you know, to become a legitimate championship contender, I do think that adding a third all-star is crucial. And so, you know, I think this summer might be a longer term play because these players are so young. You can go get someone like maybe Goran Dragic, and, you know, he's not going to be better than either of those two players, but he'll be a solid third option for a season or two. And if you sign him to a deal that is only 2 or 3 years, if you can pull that off, that kind of frees you up headed into the summer of 2021. And that's when a lot of interesting names become free agents. Giannis Antetokounmpo, you know, is mm-hmm. is probably the biggest one. And, you know, the Mavericks, you know, while they've signed his brother Kostas to their, he's one of their two-way players. And, you know, while I think Kostas is a legit NBA player, or at least a legit NBA prospect, I should say, don't kid yourself, you know.
Interesting. Yes.
One of the reasons why he's employed by the Mavericks is you know, just softening the yep. the conversation pathway to his brother and making
wow.
sure that you know, Giannis is kind of paying attention to what's happening down in Dallas, and because, you know, now he has to because of his brother, and meanwhile he's going to notice Luka and Kristaps down here, you know, doing whatever they're going to do next season. So, you know, I think that's their big fish that they're thinking about, you know, in the long term. And I think that they're going to make sure they don't ruin their flexibility in case that is something that does materialize in a couple of years. But at the same time, you know, there's other players available that summer. Bradley Beal is going to be a free agent. I think he would be a really, really good third fit to what Luka or Kristaps could be as an off-ball shooter.
Absolutely.
Like a high-level scorer, but also, you know, doesn't need the ball in his hands at all times, like Luka will and like Kristaps does to an extent. So, so I think there's a lot of options, and I think that, you know, this coming summer is really important for them to, you know, just, you know, walk the line of improving the team but not sacrificing any of the future flexibility they have. But I think for that reason, it's going to be an exciting one. It's exciting to see what they do and what the next few years progress for the team. And obviously, Luka and Kristaps, September can't get here soon enough because that pairing, it's going to be fun.
Oh, my gosh. It's going to be a blast. I'm so excited. And, you know, Tim, that's all very interesting stuff. I think, you know, the Mavs are making moves that you know, they might not be a name mentioned frequently in conversations now, but like you said, watch out. Like, maybe not this summer, but the next. It's going to be right. a time to make some splashes. I love that. All right. So, couple of quick questions for you. Who do you see winning tomorrow night or Monday night? It for anyone who's listening this on Monday morning.
I'll say Los Angeles. You know, I think that they have a more of a reason to get up. I think the Mavericks, you know, especially if they're still missing Maxi, that's an important role player for them. I'm not sure his injury status or whether he will be able to go. But, you know, if the Mavericks have any injuries at all, and obviously especially if Luka's still out, you know, while I expect him to play, there, you know, there hasn't been any official diagnosis one way or the other and whether he's going to be able to play. So, you know, if the Mavericks are banged up at all, you know, I think that obviously is going to, you know, really hurt their chances since they're already probably the less talented team. And even if they are healthy, you know, I think that they're, you know, they're only 6-23 on the road this year. Just a very, very So when you consider they haven't been good on the road, possibly could have injuries and just aren't the better team in general, you know, give me the Clippers for the win here.
I think all those factors considered, you know, I'm pulling for a Clips win as well. I'd like to keep podcasting for this team after April. And hopefully right. continue to be able to bring guests like yourself on. Tim, I hear you're also considering the mezcal now more frequently on the drink selection.
I am turning into a mezcal man myself. So headed to a mezcaleria after this, and it should be a good time. So that's the plan. Meeting up with a few Mavs folks, and I recommend it for anyone. It took me a little bit for the palate to adjust, but yeah. It's good.
It's an acquired taste. It's got that smoky edge to it. I'm a fan. Right.
There's depth and nuance to it, I feel like, and it does take a second, but once you're in, you're in.
And then you feel very VV sophisticated.